Hey everyone, JJ Cooper, Carlos Galazzo. The weekly draft podcast is back. And today we are asking you to hop in a time machine with us because while we are busy updating, keeping updated the 2026 draft list, and we are working on expanding that, and it'll be at 400 before long, and then 500, and then senior signs and all that. But while we're doing that, we also just dropped our update of the 2027 college top prospect rankings. We have 100 write-ups now, rankings of the top 100 college prospects for the 2027 class. By the time you are listening or watching this, we will be dropping the 2028 college top prospects list as well. So a lot of fun work on that, looking at what next year's class and the class after that looks like. And Carlos, as we did that, the thing I think that we just couldn't get over and over was just how good the pitching, the college pitching for next year looks to be. How excited should fans be? Some 15 months, like obviously we're looking at, we're looking too far in the future. We know a lot can happen in between, but how exciting could the college pitching in next year's class be?
Well, it's very exciting. I mean, you've got Dax Whitney at the very top. I think he's the player in next year's class that most people are probably the most familiar with at this point. He's been exceptional his first 2 years. He's looking like a very solid 1-1 candidate a year from now. But it's not just Whitney and then a fall off. I think the college pitching in the 27 class right now looks exceptional. It's a fun contrast, I feel like, to the current year's draft class because everybody's scouting 2026. Is looking around, and after Jackson, Florida, it's like, okay, who are the definite top 20 college arms? In next year's class, you might have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 pitchers that you feel like are definitely top 20 talents. I feel like on the top 30 of this 2027 board, the combination of now stuff, velocity, and performance from underclass arms that are already pitching in prominent roles, I feel like it's fairly common for pitchers to progress with the roles they're assuming in college staffs. Maybe you're a reliever, maybe you're a split starter your sophomore year, and then finally, as a junior, you get a chance to really prove what you can do as a starter. That's not really the case for this 2027 class. A lot of these guys are already fronting SEC rotations, and if you just look cumulatively, I have a post kind of getting into the weeds of what we're talking about today on just how outlandishly good this class looks. Like, the cumulative performance of these pitchers is outstanding. It's not like it's just stuff and flashes of potential. It's not just performance with pitchability guys who don't have the stuff that's going to translate to pro ball. It's kind of a combination of everything. It's size, it's velocity, it's like lights out breaking stuff. So I think if you're going to get excited about something for next year's class, for me right now, if it's not Dylan Seward, it is the college pitching in this group. It's exceptional.
There are more pitchers on our 2027 top 100 college prospects list pitching Friday nights for key teams than there are on our 2026 list, which is backwards because normally as you get to your junior year, to your draft year, that's when you ascend. The only pitcher that we have who's healthy and pitching on Friday night right now, as we record this in the first round, in our first round projection, is Jackson Florida. Everyone else is either been bounced from Friday night or is not healthy.
And right. And then we were talking about this in a recent podcast. Yeah. Like, we were saying, like, where are all the Friday night starters? Where are all the pitchers? Well, I guess the answer is they're in the 27 class. That's your answer.
So, okay. Like, when you look at this, I think it's clear that if you took Dax Whitney and you plopped him into this draft class, he would immediately become the best pitching prospect in this class.
Without question.
I think like, to give an idea just how good this guy is, it would then become like the worst he's going is 2. But there would be like a discussion of, hey, Rock Chulowski at 1, or do you want Dax Whitney? And I think you could make a case either way.
Okay, so we're going to talk about these two names in tandem a lot, but I really wonder if it would be like a Paul Skeens versus Dylan Cruz versus Wyatt Langford at the top of the board sort of scenario, because it's easy to forget this now, but we had Dylan Cruz number 1 on our board in that 23 class. We had Paul Skeens 2. It was difficult to decide which of those to put there, but we leaned with the college hitter. And I think while a majority of people maybe would still lean towards the college shortstop, which that defensive element is just another level of security and excitement that you might have, I do think Dax Whitney is talented enough to really, if he were eligible, challenge Rock for 1-1. I think this is a legitimate ace sort of upside pitching prospect who checks all the boxes, JJ. I mean, we had him as a very highly ranked prospect coming out of high school in Idaho. At the time, he had a four-pitch mix in Idaho. At the time, he had a four-pitch mix. He had a fastball you could dream on. He could spin two quality breaking balls. The delivery looked good enough to feel confident about the strike throwing. And then he's done everything you wanted to see of him and more at Oregon State. He was a full-time starter as a freshman, 17 starts, 3.4 ERA, 120 strikeouts as a freshman. And then this year, he came out, and all of a sudden, after topping out in the upper 90s, he's sitting 98 miles per hour. He's been up to 101 miles per hour. He's currently leading the country in strikeouts. He has a near 50% strikeout rate, which is towards the elite rates we saw from guys like Chase Burns, Hagen Smith. It's maybe 3 or 4% higher than what Paul Skenes did as a junior. All these guys in their junior season. So you put it all together, and aside from just the fact that he is a pitcher and there's injury risk associated with that, there are not a lot of questions with the profile. It's lights out stuff. He's getting a ton of miss on all his arsenal right now. He's tremendous.
If you took him and plopped him into the big leagues today, the quality of his stuff, he would not look out of place. Like, no. He would be one of the hardest throwing starters. Now, he's doing it on a 7-day schedule, not a 5. You know, there's differences and all. But he is right now, it's almost, we're almost underselling it to say he's the best college pitching prospect since Paul Skenes, which is, I think, undoubtedly true. But I would say even more so, you could argue he's in that rare group of pitchers who, like you said, there is a more certainty, more comfort level with college position players than pitchers. And also, I think we're in an era now where as much as teams like college pitching, they like to kind of push it down the board a little bit, because that is the part where I feel like that the industry, there is a feeling that on the hitting side, bat to ball skills, timing, those aspects of hitting, you either have them, or if you don't, it's very hard to manufacture them.
Right.
And so if you have athletic players, up the middle players who can hit, those guys go off the board first, because it's like there's so few of those that we're going to run out of them very quickly in any draft. Mm-hmm. And on the pitching side, there is a countervailing feeling, I feel like, where it's like we can find pitchers in the second, third, fourth, seventh.
It does feel like teams feel like they have a greater ability to coax more out of arms than hitters. Like you said, it's hard to kind of make a pure hitter. You either can hit or you can't. Ultimately, there are some things you can do to maybe improve weaknesses or accentuate strengths of a hitter. I think defensively, there are a lot of things you can do developmentally, but changing a defensive evaluation does not move the needle quite as much as, like, can you hit or can you not hit? And JJ, you pulled some interesting numbers looking back at kind of the expectations for arms at the top of the class in recent years. And it does feel like in recent years, in the first round in particular, it's become more hitter heavy. I wonder if this 27 college class is just so talented on the pitching side that sort of bucks that trend. And it's just a case of, hey, ultimately these teams are trying to find the best talent they can. They would like to have hitters. But if you got a lot of, I don't want to say mediocre, but if the pitching talent is just more exciting, you're still going to see a lot of those guys go early. And I'll be really curious to see, like, if we're setting a new high in terms of pitchers going in the top 10 or the first round. But as of now, I think there are far more arms who I would look at right now and say, hey, they could easily go in the first round than we typically see. Like, it's shockingly deep.
So the numbers we have is if you look at the draft bonus pool era, and I was just looking at top 10. On a normal year, you see 3 college pitchers taken among the top 10 picks in the class. Now, we've seen as few as 1 in 2018 and 2019. We've never seen 0. I don't think we ever will. Like, even in this year, I think
Jackson Flores stays healthy and we don't have that. No pitchers in the top
10. I think if he wouldn't, then it would be like Cam Flukey would, even with injuries and all. I think that there's just this thought that at some point you're going to take the first college pitcher is going to go off the board at the top.
Right. 10.
The max we've had in the draft bonus pool era is 4, which was 2012 and 2014. And I think that's the number. If you put an over under, if you're saying, where would you set it and say, like, where are you going to put that number where it's going to be hard to say above or below that number? I think that number's 4. I think if you said 3.5, I think that would be easy. I'm going to take the over on this. Mm-hmm.
This is for inside the top 10 in particular. Yeah. Which I think even being able to say, I'm going to set it there and feel confident taking the over is a testament to how talented this class is. Because we talked about Dax Whitney, but moving down the list, I'm curious. Thomas Valanciunas at Mississippi State, Chris Lavonis at Wake Forest, and then the two LSU right-handers, Cason Evans and William Schmidt. We have all of those inside our top 10 on the college board right now. I do think you could make a case for all of those pitchers to potentially be top 10 talents in 2026 if they were eligible or could reclassify them. I think they would all have a case, which is crazy.
Okay. We have more pitchers, college pitchers, on our 2027 draft rankings who are pitching currently on Friday night among our top, our first round talents on here, mm-hmm. than we do on our 2026 list. Right now, as we are talking, Jackson Flora is the only college pitcher on our 2026 top 30 in the rankings who's actually pitching on Friday nights. You have Cam Faluke, who has missed the entirety of the season so far.
And well, he made one start, his first start, and then hopefully he's coming back soon. So hopefully we'll be able to see him. But it does feel like he is approaching a return, which will be good. And then Liam Peterson, who you're just going to get to.
Liam Peterson, who's been, when you say erratic, like if you were comparing these guys we're talking about, I think you would easily say that you take these guys over Liam Peterson. Liam Peterson has got really good stuff. He does not have the track record of consistency that we're seeing from some of these sophomores.
Well, the one thing that's always kind of given me some pause with Liam Peterson, and he was trending in the right direction prior to the spring, and then it feels like he's taken a bit of a step back, but is the walk rate. So it was 13.5% walk rate as a freshman, improved to 10.5% as a sophomore. Like, okay, if that keeps trending, you're going to get into that 7-8% range where you feel a lot more comfortable, especially with your top of the draft starters, but that's ballooned to 15.2% so far this spring. Then you compare those numbers to just the career college numbers of all these top pitchers in the class. I pulled just the career performance for all of our top 30, so first two rounds sort of projected college arms in 27. Dax Whitney's career walk rate, 10.3%. Thomas Valanciunas, 6.1%. Chris Lavonis, 10.1%. Cason Evans, 9.8%. William Schmidt, 11.1%. Landon Mack, Ryan McPherson, 6.4, 7.0. You get to Josh Rittenour and Ethan Lund, who are your kind of erratic, huge stuff. Are they going to throw enough strikes? That's at pitchers 8 and 9 on the board, and this year it's pitcher number 3. So I just feel like the comfort you can feel with this 27 class, again, when it comes to strike throwing and proven starter role in college baseball, is at another level in terms of impact depth at the top of the draft. It's very odd to see, because I feel like the typical path is come into college, maybe throw in a bullpen, maybe get a few starts, sophomore year, split starter reliever role, and then junior year. It's very common for a lot of the top arms in the class to be going into their first season where they're getting a chance to start full-time. That's not going to be the case for a vast majority of these 2027 arms at the top. They've already kind of locked down these roles and in many cases pushed 2026 eligibles out of the weekend rotation or further down the pecking order of the weekend rotation.
To go back to Whitney for a minute on this.
Yeah.
When we talk about like Whitney, I think that Whitney is going to lead to very interesting discussions. Essentially, I think Paul Skene's success will do Dax Whitney very well, right? Because mm-hmm. when we were talking about Paul Skene's at the top of the class a couple of years ago, there was all the worry about the concern about, you know, okay, but he's a pitcher, the injury risk and all that. Mm-hmm. And seeing what Paul Skene's has done and the impact he has made, where he went basically from the ace of the LSU staff to one of the aces of the major leagues in one season, right? Like, if anything, the Pirates actually moved him slower than they probably should have. Like, he did not necessarily need any starts in the minor
league. We saw 2 or 3 starts in AAA, and we were already like, okay, when are they going to promote him? It took seven total. But in hindsight, you probably could have said, hey, if we started Paul Skene's directly in the major leagues, he would have been just fine.
And Dax Whitney, the thing about him is beyond the fact that he sits 98 and touches 101, to have 2 breaking balls and a changeup, all of which are effective pitches right now. Now, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean, again, he comes into pro ball, it very well may be, hey, what about this pitch? We've seen this with Paul Skeens. Paul Skeens keeps adding pitches.
Right.
But you have that, and also you have that Dax Whitney has not been in that as a freshman. He was in the bullpen throwing 22 innings, and then as a sophomore, he worked his way into the – no, Dax Whitney was the guy they were giving the ball in key postseason situations last year, and then he's like, hey, do I strike – how about I'll strike out 12 today? Is that good? You know, can I do that?
His like, career strikeout rate, JJ, is 40%, which would – for most pitchers is representing like a career best season in your draft, your platform year. It's like, hey, I pushed the strikeout rate to 40%. If his dips below, it would be like, oh, Dax Whitney's had a bad few weeks. He's only striking out 39%, but he just strikes out everyone.
You go back – to the very tail end of his freshman year. Like you go to like May of freshman year, like May 10th, he struck out 11 against Iowa. Since then, there was a May 16th start against Long Beach State, as we record this, as a freshman, where he didn't strike out 9. And then his first start of this season, when he was shaking the rust off, he didn't strike out 9. That's it. Every other start, going back to last year, Jackson Flora, who again, we really like,
but yeah, Jackson this is
Flora, a 9K strikeout outstart for Jackson Flora is a really good start. That's right. Like, oh, Whitney didn't have it tonight.
I've said this a few times, and I don't want to do it too often because you're not getting a Dax Whitney in every draft class, but I do think my reservation for Jackson Flora at the top, just comparing him to a typical top of the class arm, is he just does not dominate in the same way that I feel like you tend to see from the guys who are going to be the first college pitchers off the board. To your point, a 9 strikeout game is a really good one for Jackson Flora. He's only had 3 double-digit strikeout games this season, first against Utah, where he struck out 10. Against UC Davis, he struck out 11. Against Hawaii, he struck out 12. But then he also has 5 strikeouts against Southern Miss, 6 strikeouts against Portland, 7 strikeouts against Long Beach State, 5 strikeouts against Oregon, and then 9 against Cal Poly most recently as we're watching this. It just does feel like Dax Whitney provides the electricity and dynamism that is lacking in the current year draft class. And that's maybe part of what makes him, I don't know, a quasi-generational sort of pitching prospect. I don't know like what sort of label he's going to get. And it is a bit odd because we're saying best college arm since Paul Skeens. And Paul Skeens really wasn't that long ago. But when you look at...
Yeah, can I put it this way? If Paul Skeens didn't exist, Paul Skeens is so good that when we say best college arm coming into... when we're talking about this, we're not talking about what they became. Tarik Skubal is an incredible pitcher who was a college pitcher.
Just perception at the time.
Perception at the time. If Paul Skeens didn't exist, I think we would be saying best since Steven Strasburg.
Right. Yep.
And I think that's a lot longer ago.
Right.
And then it would be, okay, so if you said in the 21st century, and you said perceived, again, there are 15 months we want him to be healthy. We want him to keep doing what he's doing. But if you said perceive coming into their draft, into the draft, college pitchers, I think it is Pryor, it is Strasburg, and it is Skeens, and now Dax Whitney. I think he is in that grouping this far out. Like usually, Paul Skeens moved himself into
again,
that.
Paul Skeens, he came into the year, his draft year, we ranked him top 10 or maybe right outside the top 10. I think we had him ranked 8th on our preseason list, and it was, hey, two-way player at Air Force, a ton of power. There was a lot of chatter about how good he looked as a hitter in the fall. And then thankfully, LSU exclusively is pitching him. He makes a huge leap in power on the fastball. The slider adds a ton of power. It adds a lot better shape, not better shape, just different shape. And then he proceeds to dominate. But to your point, Dax Whitney has made this leap as a sophomore. He has made a, I think, pretty stuff, at least fastball velocity equivalent jump as a sophomore. And JJ, we haven't gotten like into the weeds on Dax Whitney's stuff here, but as we sit here and talk right now, just take a guess. What do you think his overall miss rate is across his pitch types? We know the strikeout rate is near 50%. If you had to guess, I don't know if you have this up now or if you know.
I do not have it up. I would say that I'm guessing that he throws all 4 pitches for in zone for like, oh, you're saying his whiff rate. You're
just overall miss rate. Yeah, overall whiff rate for all pitch types. Okay. And I'll get into like specifics of the pitches here, but it's
okay.
Absurd.
Whiff rate with his, okay, it's going to be something really stupid. Because again, like when you say a fastball whiff rate, if you've got a fastball whiff rate of 25%, that's really good.
Yeah, anything over that's good. Like I feel like in college, once you're over that 30% mark, it's like, okay, this is like elite fastball. But just overall, combine all pitches. What do you think is overall?
Okay, so I'm going to say 30%. Right, I know I'm going to be low.
Oh, you're so low, JJ. You're so low. His overall miss rate currently through this 8 games in 2026, he has a 48% miss rate across all pitch types. The fastball has a 44% miss rate, which is utterly absurd. The slider, the changeup, the curveball, all of those pitches have whiff rates of 50% or more. It's a 53% on the slider, 53% on the changeup, 50% on the curveball. Oh, and by the way, the strikes are also better this year. It's just insane. I don't know what else to say.
To go another version of this, he has the best strikeout rate in Division One as a sophomore, which is, again, just something you do not see. Like, you just, I'm now going to try to find what Paul Skene's whiff rates were at LSU in his draft year. And I don't, again, now I want to acknowledge there's one other thing about Dax Whitney. Oregon State is doing the best they can about who they schedule. Mm-hmm. But the challenge with that, and they are scheduling reasonable teams.
Yep.
But they are the utterly rare independent.
Right.
And so because of that, I do not want to in any way say that you are comparing.
Yeah, don't just take these numbers off to the right. I just think it illustrates just how dominant he's been across the board. But I wanted to pull up, I pulled this up quickly, and as you can get your numbers, but just a year ago, Liam Doyle, his carrying card was the fastball. It was just an outlier fastball, crazy swing and miss, like, and then questions about basically everything else. Liam Doyle's fastball miss rate a year ago was 40%. Dax Whitney currently 44%. Like, the fact that in terms of power, maybe you wouldn't say fully shaped, but at least effectiveness in college baseball, that is equivalent or even better. And then he has all those other secondaries in a much more typical starter profile. It's just an absurd combination of stuff for Dax.
I pulled up, thanks to Synergy, I pulled up Paul Skene's from 2023 at LSU. Now, he had a 62% whiff rate on his slider and a 57% on his changeup. Those were really good, right?
Wanted him to throw his changeup more frequently because it looked so good in college.
And an 80% on his curveball, but at the same time, like, he only had 5 swings at his curveball the entire season. He only threw like 41 of them, right? All year. But he had a 30% whiff rate on his fastball. Like, and that's good.
Poor fastball shaped Paul Skene's.
Yeah. Sitting 98.6, sitting 98.6, touching 100. You know, that was still like, mm-hmm. it was not a just beat you in the zone over and over pitch. It was, you know, it was not his slider.
Right.
Dax Whitney. Okay. I do want to ask one more question with Whitney. And just to kind of just throw this out, as good as we just made him out to be, the depth of this class is, I want to ask the question of, could he be surpassed in this class by someone else, even if Whitney's healthy? And we'll get into that right after this quick break. So, Carlos, if we're looking, though, with this class, is it possible to construct a case where another one of these pitchers could surpass a healthy Dax Whitney?
It's possible, yes, JJ. I wouldn't want to ever say it's not possible, but it's really hard for me to think through how someone could overtake him if he's healthy because of everything we've just talked about. I mean, I just don't know that you would ever get to a point where you feel the same comfort level with another pitcher as you would with a guy like Dax Whitney, but maybe there's a guy like Thomas Valanciunas who, because he's left-handed, that trait allows him to maybe move up there. But even as I'm talking about it, it feels like I'm kind of forcing myself to give a best case for someone. I think if the qualifier is Whitney is healthy, it's very hard for me to actually believe that's going to be the case.
To lay this out, Chris Lavonis, who is not even our number two on this, but to just give you an idea of how good the pitching for this class is, Chris Lavonis is sitting 97 to 98, has touched 100, 101 himself. Mm-hmm. He has also kind of like five, you know, he has 5 pitches because he throws a solid slider. He's got a cutter. He's got a changeup. Like, he's got a curveball. He's a truly pretty polished starting pitcher who is dominating in the ACC, who has a track record himself. And to go back to what you're saying, like, he is someone who you're not saying, oh, you're hoping that he'll ascend to that kind of role as a, you know, like, but he was a little bit more traditional in that he was kind of more in that pen role as a freshman, whereas Whitney was like the ace of the staff. He's a second round pick, like talent out of high school. Like he has all this track record as well. I agree with you. I don't think anyone can pass a healthy Dax Whitney unless Dax Whitney backs up, right? Like you could, if just Dax Whitney, if you said he has not improved one iota from what he is right now to this time, I mean, to draft day in 2027.
Essentially, if he does what Rock Chalowski seems to be doing in 2026, I don't know that Rock has made a huge stride this year, but he's been basically the same player he was a year ago. And that's going to be enough to cement himself into 1-1 this year. I think the same is probably true for Whitney. If he just comes out again and is the same pitcher, it's very hard. Like someone would have to take a massive leap. I don't know, maybe like a multiple grade jump in command for Chris Lavonis, because like you said, he's throwing incredibly hard. He does have a ton of secondaries that are all swing and miss pitches. For me right now, as I look at Dax Whitney and Chris Lavonis, I feel like the command piece for Whitney is a little bit ahead. So maybe for Chris, if you're making the case for him, you say, okay, the control has been fine. It was like maybe a little bit erratic a year ago. Now it's gotten quite a bit better. And then the secondaries and the fastball command all just take a huge jump. Maybe you have two pitchers who are kind of at the Dax Whitney level. And it's like, okay, which one are you going to take? The one with more track record, the one who's made these gains. But yeah, for me, I think it's more like at some point, we'll probably just have to work down the list and talk through why all these other guys are so exciting, because even if they're not going to surpass Dax Whitney, we're looking at like a chance to have a historic college pitching draft next year, I feel like.
Chris Lavonis is our third rated college pitcher in next year's class. Mm-hmm. And I could absolutely multiple years where you could say, if you put him in that year's draft class, he would be the number one college pitching class.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you could go down the list. Like William Schmidt, Landon Mack, Ryan McPherson at Mississippi State is a workhorse starter who's locked down this Friday role. He missed a few starts with, I'm not sure what the specifics are of the injury, but like his strike throwing, his power, the diversity of his pitch mix is exceptional. Sam Cozart at 20 on this board at Texas. Jackson Barbary at Florida. Again, Rittenauer and Ethan Lund at Florida, Oklahoma State in the middle of this list. Like all these guys are tremendous. And I really do think you can go down the list. Maybe Ryan McPherson would be the last name I would say, but the top seven on our board, I feel like in a typical year, all have the talent where they would have had a case as the top college arm going into their draft year. And then also, JJ, I know this has been a very pitching heavy focus, but
so that's why I want to ask you that question, which is at the same time, we're just focusing on the college class. Like you said, there's also some very interesting, especially one very interesting high school prospect in this class. But to go back to we talked about the Whitney versus Rock Chalowski, right? Number two on our board, ahead of most all these very fascinating pitchers, is Florida shortstop Brendan Lawson, who is leading the SEC in on-base percentage and is fourth in slugging percentage in the SEC as a sophomore shortstop. Is it possible, because for all we just talked about with Whitney, could this be an interesting debate of who's the first college player off the board between those two next year? Because you do have this up the middle, long track record of performance shortstop who's doing it in the SEC. Like, he's a really fascinating prospect too, is he not?
Absolutely. I mean, Brendan Lawson, I feel like on the first few iterations of our college list, was the top prospect in the class, in part because there's just a lot of comfort we have with his offensive profile, with that hit power combination as a left-handed hitter who we thought could play the infield. What's really crazy is Brendan Lawson has also taken a pretty huge jump, at least in terms of performance. He's done that while moving to shortstop. He was not Florida's everyday shortstop in 2025. I think entering this year, there were a lot of questions about whether or not he just was a shortstop at all moving forward. Him playing that position throughout the spring this year is going to really help teams add conviction to their defensive reviews. I'm still not sold on whether he's definitely a shortstop moving forward. But if you feel confident that he can move to third and be a really good defender, which is where I've been on him for probably a few years now after seeing him in high school, that's still a tremendously exciting package of power, patience, pure hitting ability. He currently has a 352, 556, 802 slash line. That's a 1358 OPS, 11 home runs. He has inverted his strikeout and walk rates this year. The strikeout rate down, is down a little bit, and he's walking a ton more. It's probably because I wouldn't want to pitch to Brennan Lawson if I was a team game planning against him. But he's done everything you want to see from him, and he's not moving down because of any bad performance. He's only flipped with Dax Whitney because basically everyone we talked to is like, yeah, Dax is the guy right now. But I do think it should be an interesting conversation because he could be a middle of the lineup left-handed hitting shortstop, and that is a very rare profile to have.
That I was going to say, I was going to add in the left-handed hitting component. And by the way, we just came off of the World Baseball Classic, and as someone who's covered World Baseball Classic, every iteration of it, Team Canada always had this long-running problem where they didn't have shortstops. And they actually, now we saw this year, like it was better, but Brendan Lawson, who's from Ontario, Brendan Lawson should be Team Canada's shortstop for like the next 15 years in international play. Like they have never had a guy like this. Like, do remember Russell Martin, as a catcher, as a big league catcher, was like, I'll play shortstop for Team Canada because he was their best option. Orr, guys like that. Brendan Lawson is going to be like, what have we done? We actually have, because you know, this every Canadian hitter feels like this left-handed hitter, but because they all play hockey, but this left-handed hitting shortstop who could be a middle of the order bat. And again, who has a track record now. And the thing about him is, you said the hitting is improving. The power is some of the best. As a sophomore, he hits the ball as hard, as consistently, as basically anyone in the country. You cannot find a 2026 college draft prospect in this class who is clearly at a grade above when it comes to productive college power. That's what Brendan Lawson is doing right now. And he's still got another year. Like this, we don't want to get over. Like we said, we're at the.
It does happen every year. Yeah,
we're at the point where you're looking at the, you know, your new place, and you're like, you haven't seen any of the flaws yet. You're just
these are the shiny new toys.
Yes, the shiny new toys.
This is the honeymoon period for the 27 class.
But the toys are really shiny in the 2027 class. They're really, really impressive, and. It does feel like the other thing I would say about this is we've talked a little bit about pitchers. There's so much more. If you enjoy this, go to baseballamerica.com. We've got write-ups for the top 100. The thing that stands out to me, though, is when you talk about the college hitters in this next class versus the pitchers, past Whitney, I feel like that there's this group of pitchers who could all move all around and all. I feel like Lawson is probably more at kind of like a little bit of a separation from a Gavin Kelly, from a Landon Harrison. Landon Harrison, by the way, having an incredible season. Incredible season.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a guy who's, again, maybe he's not a pro shortstop, although, as we just said, teams feel really good about their ability to improve defenses of players. But you have this in the dirt, going to be a middle-of-the-order bat, you think, who can play, provide a lot of defensive value, versus Harrison, who's a pure outfielder and maybe a corner, right? Like, that's, to me, where there's like a definite separation here that we don't see as much post after Whitney on the pitching side.
Yeah, no, that's all fair. I do think Landon Harrison is maybe one of the more impressive just hitters I've seen this year folding in the 26s as well. So I'll be really curious to see like how much scrutiny is placed on his defensive profile and how much the bat will just overwhelm those concerns because he is a tremendously impressive hitter.
Okay. That's, I think, a perfect way to wrap this up, which is to say, let's just do, I'm putting this completely on the spot, but we'll just do this real quick, which is, okay, let's just look at college. Let's take the high school guys out of it, right?
Yep.
But let's just draft a top five, and we're saying that we're rolling this year's class and next year's class both into it, right?
Okay.
1-1.
Are you picking? Are we going back and forth? We're collectively picking.
You make a pick, and I'll say if I agree with you or not.
Let's go Rock 1.
Okay. I right now, I would agree with that. Like, again, you are talking about, okay, 2. I think we both know who's 2. Dax Whitney's 2, right?
Yep. Dax Whitney's 2. 3, Brendan Lawson. I'm not going to think too much about it.
I don't even think, like, with the best other college hitters we have in the class are Justin LeBron, Vaughn Lackey, Ace Reese, Chris Hakopian. Mm-hmm. Brendan Lawson's at a different, I feel like he's at a different strata than those guys.
Yeah.
Like he is, like we're talking about two SEC shortstops, Justin LeBron and Brendan Lawson. Brendan Lawson is a year younger, mm-hmm. but he has a much longer track record, I would say, of hitting than LeBron does. So,
okay. So we got Rock, we got Dax, we got Brendan Lawson. Who's four for you? My four is, I'd probably go Von Lackey.
I think I'm going to go. So this is going to be wrong because I would may go Lavonis, you know,
okay.
Which
there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, go with Lavonis.
You know, I'm saying like we've got him four. We've got,
we got them side by side. If you wanted to say you prefer the guy at 4-3, I don't think that's an issue,
but a little bit more. Okay. Okay. So I'd say that. What about five for you?
Five for me is, if I took Lackey, I would either be taking Valanciunas or Lavonis, probably. I'd probably take both those over Jackson Flora.
I would take them over. I think what I'm saying is like, so basically if you
We've officially gassed up the 27 class, JJ. We've sufficiently hyped it. Now next year at this time, we'll be talking about how 2028 looks so great compared to 27.
I will tell you right now, if it does, something has changed because I know like this was
maybe that is what you should underline because every year things change.
Everything, but okay, we're just putting it in a little time capsule here. It's a great thing about doing a podcast, right? Is that we can say, we can go back and look and say, what was the feeling at the time? I will tell you right now, the feeling of the 28 class right now is a wonderful reminder of how this does change because that's actually a useful other way to wrap this up, which is to make the point, when we're doing our 26 list, we are lining it up with an incredible amount of feedback from industry sources, right? Because that's what they're doing. They're having to evaluate and line it up. When it comes to the 27 and the 28 classes, as we do this, we have to take a little bit of a different approach because we get feedback. We're getting industry feedback. Like you said, especially at the top of the list, it's not hard to find people who have opinions about Dax Whitney and Brendan Lawson and all. But it is a little bit different from a standpoint of like they're getting feedback much more in ranges, I would say, right? Like,
well, these guys are just none of them are really focused on those players. So like they're seeing them, they're taking notes on them. The area scouts want to have history, but the emphasis is on 26 players. And so unless you're talking to a scout who, and not all teams have these roles now, and some of them have been cut. Unless you're talking to a scout that's specifically trying to line up underclass players, there's just not a lot of people who have been focusing on that. Everyone's just focused on 26. That's kind of how it works. And so we have less feedback from scouts in this with the sort of granularity and specificity that we do with 26s. And so for us, that does mean that what we personally think is driving the list a little bit more than our current year class set. But we've got a lot of data to work with. We do talk with people, like you said. There's a lot of performance that goes into this.
Names and ranges. And then we say, okay, now let's try to line this up.
Right.
But what I was going to say about it is that the useful part of doing this is when you get to the 28, very few players, because that is the freshman right now, right? Like that is the, and you don't have to go very down, look far down a list to where you are either talking about, you are lining up players who are in very small roles for major programs or players who are getting more playing time at smaller programs, right? Like that is something where you are in the 40s and 50s on this list. You are talking about guys who's like, they have not taken that step yet where it's like, okay, that's a weekend rotation guy. They're going to be there one day, but they're right now, they are the guy who's pitching either a midweek starter or much more often like a bullpen guy right now who will then blossom into that. Or it's the DH right now who's going to be their catcher next year kind of thing where there's a lot more of that. But yeah, we are kind of gassing up. Like, I think when we just did that, we would say that if you said you could put the college players from this year's class first and next year's class together, we would take either between 3 and 4 of the 27s out of 5 compared to 1 to 2 of the 26s. So that's interesting. That is a useful exercise. And I think if we went further, I don't think it changed much because I do think that we would be like getting to the Cason Evans and the William Schmitz pretty quick.
I like some of the 26 hitters, I think, on the college side a little bit. So,
yeah, I do think that. Like, if you said, like, Gavin Kelly versus, again, I'm take Von Lackey, I take, you know, like, there's more, yes, there are more bats at that point. But,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so fun to talk through, though.
It is fun to talk to through. And the other thing about all of this is, it is useful to know. It is useful to look ahead. Not because what we're saying right now is going to be how this looks 15 months from now. But it is useful to be thinking about the fact that, okay, like when you're looking at this 26 class, right? When we're talking about that there's a lack of college pitching, it kind of does, like, teams, organizations, you don't want to force things. You do want to take guys who you think you can develop and all that. But there's a year from now, like if you said over the next, like these drafts affect a decade of an organization, not just a year, knowing you've got this much pitching coming next year, maybe it is even a little bit more of like, if you like the bats in this class, go a little hitter heavy this year, knowing, don't worry, we can come back and be a little pitcher heavy next year. Again, just an idea, just a thing to talk about. Anything else we haven't covered on this, Carlos, that you want to roll into?
No, I think we kind of covered it. I just encourage people, again, we've got our 27 college list out with reports. Really great work from the whole team. Jeff Ponce, Jacob Rudner pitching in to help with this. We've got the 28 top 50. So if you want to just get a picture of just where the college talent is at this stage, they're both updated this week. So enjoy those reports for BSA.
Well, that was the draft podcast for this week, looking at the 2027 class. For Carlos Collazo, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody.